Hello and welcome to the Inquiry Teacher podcast. In today's episode, I'm honoured to speak with Alexis Wiggins, a dynamic educator and author of the book, The Best Class You Never Taught, How Spiderweb Discussion Can Turn Students into Learning Leaders. With a wealth of experience in the education field, Alexis has been a high school English teacher, instructional coach, and consultant, and is known for her ability to inspire students to take ownership of their learning. In this episode, we'll explore Alexis's approach to spiderweb discussions and how this technique promotes collaboration, critical thinking, and student leadership. So sit back, relax, and join me as I chat with the insightful Alexis Wiggins about her transformative work in education. Hello and welcome to the Inquiry Teacher podcast. I'm very excited to be joined by Alexis Wiggins today. Thank you, Alexis, for taking the time to join us on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. So what I would like to do is if you could just give a quick introduction of yourself to the listeners. Obviously, I'm a fan of your work and I know about you. So it'd be good to just give the listeners a quick introduction about what it is you've done so far in your career.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I started out never wanting to be a teacher ever, because both my parents were teachers, and I thought I was going to do different things. I accidentally kind of fell into it, and I've been teaching for over 20 years in a variety of independent schools in the United States and overseas schools in a number of different countries and continents. So I've had the pleasure of teaching mostly high school English, but also a little middle school here and there, and some Spanish as well, and some history as well. And along the way, developed a method called spiderweb discussion and wrote a book about it. So I think you read that book, and that's why I'm here.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. All right. So it's great. It's great to have you on and to, you know, to talk a bit more about the spiderweb discussion and the work you did in the book that you've produced, because it's been something that's really helped and improved my practice, as well as the teachers within my school that, you know, I've done workshops with to help them to understand it a bit more and to be able to have a go. So I think it's going to be a really exciting tool for listeners to be able to hear you talk about it a bit more, and then hopefully go and get some further reading with the book itself to kind of help them. All right, so I like to start the all of the podcast episodes with a generic question. So I'm always interested to hear what the guests say about this, but if you could pick any famous person or celebrity from past or present to teach you your school subjects for the whole day, who would they be and why?
I see your interesting generic question, and I raise you probably nobody. I don't want a celebrity or famous person teaching, because I think the idea of being great at your content or great, you know, you imagine a science teacher saying Einstein or you know, myself in English saying Shakespeare. But the truth is, I think the art of teaching is truly its own art. And so, you know, being wonderful as a writer or being a gifted actor or scientist is really different than the act of teaching. So I actually think I just want someone who's a great teacher, whether they're famous or not, teaching my classroom or subject.
All right. Yeah, agreeable. I'm sure there'll be many that agree with you there as well. Yeah. All right. Thank you for that. Okay, so let's dive into a bit more about you know, the term spiderweb discussion, because it's quite a catchy title for a discussion to be used. So, where did the idea and the concept come around for spiderweb discussion?
The origins in it lie in as I go into my book, lie in a school that I taught in New York many years ago. And it's called a Harkness school. There are a number of Harkness schools around the world, mostly in the U.S. The premise comes from a school in New Hampshire that a man donated a lot of money years ago. His name was Harkness, because he believed that there had to be a better way than boys in rows answering questions. And so they developed this sort of round table discussion. And over the years, it evolved. And that sort of became the Harkness method. And I worked at a school that was a Harkness school, grade 5 through 12. And it was a Harkness classroom in every classroom, science, math, English, you know, it wasn't just for the humanities. In fact, the science rooms were labs were built in the back and then a table in the front. So you'd go do a lab experiment and then come to the table and discuss what happened. So I found this sort of fascinating as a practice. I had grown up in a school that valued student discussion, but it was mostly teacher-led, classic Socratic seminar or teacher-led discussion, particularly in my, English classes. But Harkness was something else, especially at this school. This school had sort of developed a sort of unique model in which all the students got a group grade in the English department. And that was something I had never seen before. I'd always counted participation, a percentage like 10%. You know, you talk a lot, you get a good grade, and you don't talk very much, you don't get a good grade. But through the work that they had done developing this rubric as a department before I got there, I realized that the entire, few years I'd been teaching before that with discussion, it really had been rewarding bad behavior. Because the students who spoke the most, regardless of how helpful the content of what they were saying was, were rewarded. So you were basically rewarding volume and interruption and sort of the behavior you actually don't want to encourage. And students who might have had a lot to say but were reticent to say it or couldn't find the right moment to get in or were just a little less confident were not getting heard. So that sort of opened me up to a new style of discussion, and I saw the benefits. And the group grade, I think, was a big part of that, that we were now working as a team. So what do we all need to do? Maybe I need to be quiet for someone else to say something great. Maybe I need to learn, and I would coach students how to do this over time. If you're a great participator, how do you then go to the next level and become the person who gets the most out of your classmates? How do you become a great question asker? How do you ask a question that advances the conversation far beyond where it already was, rather than just sort of say your thing and get the teacher's attention? So the term spiderweb discussion came because after I moved on from that school, I kept developing it. And I started doing more and different things with it, with feedback, with coding, mapping the discussion, the way that we would do the feedback at the end. And basically, when you map the discussion, you basically start with your pen on, you draw a circle or a square and the students' names around it. And I always circle the first student who starts, and then I draw a line to the name of the next student, and then the next student, and the next student. And of course, over the course of 30 or 40, 60 minutes, it becomes a web. And so we learn very quickly that if everyone does their part, and by part, we mean achieve balance, inspire empathy, ask good questions, don't interrupt. When everyone does their part, it's like an actual spider web in nature, that if you all pull your own strand, it's beautiful, it's even, it's balanced, it's purposeful. But if you pull off a couple of the strands in nature, the whole web falls apart. And that's sort of true in the classroom as well. So spider web discussion became the sort of name to describe the process as well as the mapping.
Yeah. And it's a lovely way to put it as well, because like you say, it needs that balance and it needs that, connections from everybody to be able to withstand. And my students really, really enjoy looking at that balance on the spider web afterwards. You know, they're really engaged to be able to say, oh, how did we do this time? And we compare them from previous times, and they like to keep a copy of them. So it's a really wonderful way to map it, yeah, to be able to see what's been happening.
I love to see when the students come into class and they look. I keep a notebook of all of them, and the most recent ones on top. So they always scroll through to other classes or their class. Oh, who did what today? Oh, look, they got an A or whatever. So yeah, I think the energy is, I think, increased by the mapping and the excitement over that journey.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, it's brilliant. And so in your book, you talk a lot about how this process helps, with critical thinking and communication skills. Can you give an example of, where you've seen this in action, or is there a particular moment where it just clicks and you can see that kind of that students are using these skills and aware of these skills?
Yeah, I think usually right away, even on the first day, even when students aren't experienced, there's usually a sort of aha moment. Sometimes the aha moment is when the discussion gets exciting. Sometimes it's when it falls really flat, and then we get to unpack it and say, what happened? What's going on today? Oh, well, we're just nervous or shy, or we've never done this before. Half the people didn't do the reading. And so then the aha moment comes in the debrief and the feedback and how do we get better next time? But one moment that stands out, I think, that I've written about in the past is the boy who I'll call Jay. And he nearly broke spiderweb discussion for me about 10 or 15 years ago. I had sort of found my groove with it. I was writing and presenting on it. And all of a sudden, I had a boy who believed, you know, a 16-year-old boy who believed that his job was to agree or disagree with everything everybody said. So, you know, one class member would say something and he'd say, I agree. And here's why, or I disagree. And here's why. So it was basically a ping pong match with him and everybody else in the room constantly. And so I had to troubleshoot. I actually had students come see me and say, we're not enjoying this. We feel intimidated by him and we don't want to continue this process. And so I thought, oh gosh, I know how beneficial it is if we can just kind of crack this chemistry in this room. How can we do it? So I talked to my father, who was a, you know, education expert in the field, Grant Wiggins was his name. And he said, well, have you thought about giving them different roles? And I said, no, I haven't really done that. So I went off and brainstormed these different roles and okay, we're going to try different roles. So today you're a 3-question asker and you can only ask 3 questions. That's it. So you got to think really carefully about the 3 questions, but you can't say anything else, right? So I thought I'd figure that out. I gave different roles to different people. And then what happened is Jay asked his 3 questions and then he started doing homework for another class. He was completely checked out if he wasn't involved. It was all about him. So it was fascinating. So it took a couple more weeks and troubleshooting and I was really stressed about it. But then I gave him different roles and finally I had to talk to him privately. Nothing got through really. But finally, I asked him to be I forget the name of the role right now off the top of my head, but it's the person who invites other people into the discussion who haven't yet made it in. And that this is part of the grade for them at the time, you know, playing these roles. So, you know, I heard him debating and saying, I agree, I disagree. And then finally, I saw him say, what do you think, Keon, to a kid next to him? And Keon, who hadn't spoken yet, said, well, here's what I think. And he went and found a passage in this book we were reading in Pharaoh's Army and said, I think I see a motif here. And he sort of unlocked this whole thing that no one had ever thought of, not even me. And everybody was amazed. Oh, that's good. Writing this was an IB course. Mm-hmm. So they're all, you know, marking up their books, like excited that they found something new and different. And I could see on Jay's face, he hadn't thought of this. So in the debrief, one of the things I said was, because you stopped and saw that someone wasn't yet in the conversation and you asked and valued, you know, to hear his voice, we all benefited. That's the purpose. So I think that is one of the stories, my favorite stories that really, and then after that, it went well. He, you know, he calmed down a little bit and it was less sort of a ping pong match. So I think each class had its quirks. That was a hard class. That year was a hard year. But even more recently, I think a perfect example is a colleague, my middle school colleague, Tracy Hill, who teaches English language arts with me right now. And she and I just published a piece in Education Leadership, ASCD's magazine, just last week that came out on how to use classroom discussion strategies for deeper critical thinking. And she introduced our school to peer coaching. So we have a new method of giving feedback in spiderweb discussion where students are one-to-one, kind of like fishbowl. And, you know, this is standard. This has been around for a while. You know, you have an inner circle, an outer circle, and the students are paired up giving each other feedback. Great. I never loved that approach. It didn't thrill the kids, so it didn't thrill me. But she introduced something like it's a game. So at halftime, the students come together and they coach. The one who's on the outside coaches the one on the inside and says, okay, you've contributed 3 times, but you only referred to the text once. And, you know, some other kids are asking some interesting questions. Do you think you could ask a question? So each kid then has this peer coach and goes back into the game for the second half of the discussion and kind of comes alive with the feedback right in the middle. And so that was really cool. I watched her demonstrate that a few times last year in middle school. And this year is the first time that our whole team tried it in the high school. And it's been great. And it got everybody into the conversation for the first time. So I think, you know, back to your question, I think there are lots of opportunities for critical thinking. And I think anyone who tries spiderweb discussion in any course, any context, any discipline, will find kids have a lot more to say and a lot deeper, more interesting understanding and a way of thinking and seeing things that you don't even have. But it does take some coaching and some time and some patience with the social dynamics and the dialogue dynamics and having a good rubric to really get to that critical thinking consistently that you want to see.
Yeah, some brilliant suggestions. I really like that kind of fishbowl activity. I think that's a really good way to kind of step it up the next level, isn't it? What would you say about the rubric then? Do you adjust the rubric as it needs to for the classes, or do you find after the years of, you know, of doing a lot of spiderweb discussion, have you found kind of the generic rubric that works for most classes?
I have been using the same rubric for all these years and decades, and it's worked so well for me. I think every now and then I'll add something to it. If we're working on vocabulary that's really specific to that course, I might, you know, throw a bone in there and say, who can help reference the vocabulary, use the vocabulary in context. I know my husband was a world language teacher and he played around with the rubric and adapted it to say that students correct each other's grammar and errors in vocabulary. Mm. And I thought that was great. And other world language teachers have told me that that's a really great piece, that that's part of the expectation for the students. You're not waiting for the teacher to be the expert and do the correction. You can correct each other. But yeah, I found the rubric works really well for me. But I have a number of rubrics for different age groups. I have a standards-based rubric, IB rubric, you know, an A to F rubric. And I don't count the grades anymore. When I worked at a Harkness school, we were expected to count Harkness grades. And that was just part of the structure, and all the parents and students, everyone understood that and bought in. And so that was great. We just did that. I think, you know, having a group grade is problematic from a best practices standard when you don't have an environment like that. So for me, it's always a formative grade now, except maybe once a year in a certain class. I have seniors in film this year. Once a year, we have one of our discussions they sort of work up to is graded, but they have multiple opportunities to reach the standard. It's not just a one and done. So I find the rubric works.
So they can build
up
to.
Yeah. I find the rubric works really well for me, but I think people should adapt it any way that works for them. Basically, what I always say is put on the rubric something that sort of, we did it, we didn't. It's really clear. There's no kind of gray area. It's like, we did all speak or we didn't. We really did reference the text often and use it to support our ideas, or we didn't. And it just becomes easy to check. It's a checklist rubric. And then put the behaviors that you want to see on there. Do you want people attentive and engaged and pushing the conversation to really great heights and depths? Then say that on the rubric. So, yeah.
Yeah, great. I'm a secondary English teacher at EAL, so language acquisition. Depending on the level of the students, yeah, we just need to adjust the rubric so that they can comprehend what it is that's going on it. But that one of the activities I like to do is to get them to try and simplify the rubric, and they can come up with the statements that they want to do. So they're practicing their writing as well.
That's great.
And coming up with the rubric, and they get a lot of buy-in that way. They really enjoy seeing that rubric then on the wall and that they've created.
So. Oh, I love that. What a great activity. That's smart.
All right. So just, I suppose another thing from perhaps our listeners might be wondering would be, we spoke about the behaviors that we have in the spiderweb discussion and creating the rubric. How do you encourage those students at the beginning who perhaps are a bit reluctant to want to speak in a larger group, or perhaps maybe just don't even, you know, really like the idea of the activity and they're not really motivated by it?
Yeah, that is a very real consideration. And culturally, it matters too. I lived for a time in China where it was, you know, impolite to speak out and correct the teacher or argue back, debate. And so then I moved to the Middle East where everyone's talking over everybody and it's a very oral culture. And so there was a lot of enthusiasm. So it's interesting. I think, you know, it depends on the culture you're in, but also each individual student's culture and the culture of the school. What I would say is, I think we're not doing students any favors by helping them avoid things that challenge them or give them fear that we know they really do need, both in school and beyond. So I think really important skills are how to have dialogue, how to collaborate, how to ask great questions, how to use evidence to support what you or someone else is saying. And all of those are pieces of spiderweb discussion. So you don't have to speak 30 times in a discussion to pull your own strand of the web. But maybe you always have a quote for someone's point when they're trying to make this point and they don't have the proof. And you say, actually, you know, on page 72, he says just that. And maybe that's your contribution. You're scared to give an opinion or even speak up. But that is, I've seen students do that and be so valuable to the conversation, even more than maybe the student with the opinion. So I think what I start by doing is saying everyone has a strand to pull and everyone's strand is different. So we're not looking to create 20 extroverts doing the same thing in the classroom all the time. We're looking to build our skills as a team. So how can I complement the skills of my team in this discussion over time? That might be providing evidence. That might be asking a question. For some students, you know, the reality is speaking up once or twice in a year is a huge deal for them. So I always celebrate it. When that happens and someone speaks for the first time, I give them a shout out. Sometimes they don't want attention, but you know, I'll try to find the way that makes them feel good. I might say at the end of the class, this is the first time we heard from Sarah. I loved what she had to say. Didn't you guys? I want to hear more from you, Sarah. Thank you so much for speaking up today. And I think making kids feel good about reaching challenges that are hard to them is part of what is built in here. But I learned an important lesson from a student years ago named Ali. He almost never spoke up in discussion. And I made a video for a workshop on spiderweb discussion years ago. And I interviewed all my students. And I asked him how he felt about speaking up. And he said, on camera, he was very outgoing. But in discussion, he was very, very silent. And I said, how do you feel? I said, do you consider yourself a shy person? And I thought I knew the answer. And he said, no, I don't. And I was really surprised. I realized I misunderstood him. He said, I consider myself someone with a lot to say, but I am shy to say it. And I thought that was really interesting because I had always thought he, you know, a shy person just didn't want to get in there and didn't really have that much to say. I didn't understand that he was feeling he had a lot to say, but didn't know how to get in. So that kind of taught me an important lesson. And I approached him and other students after that differently and, you know, played around with roles and things like that. Well, fast forward, he became an engineer and taught at the university level. And he wrote me once he was teaching to say that he started using spiderweb discussion in his engineering classes with his students and that it gave him confidence and courage and really helped him become a better teacher, but also become a better worker. So, I have enough stories from students like that who've grown up and said, I didn't like it, but it did give me the skills that I needed. So thank you. So I do feel pretty positive about it, but you need to be gentle and you need to be careful. You don't want to put someone on the spot or make them really miserable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all about building that trust, isn't it? And, absolutely. And seeing the process and, yeah.
That's the word. That's the word, trust. You really have to give that trust and you have to really expect it of all the students for each other.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So where do you see the you know, the next progression of spiderweb discussion for you, what is it that you will be continuing to work on for it? Is there anywhere people can go to learn more? Obviously, your book is the first place. Is there anywhere else that people can go to find more of your work, more examples?
I have a huge page of resources. I don't know if you have a place to share resources with the podcast.
Yeah, I'll put them in the show notes.
But yeah, I just have a Google Doc that I give out to all my workshop participants, and it's just like everything you could ever want there. Articles about it. I have a frequently asked questions. I have a how to start it over a year and continue it over a year. So if it's like, where do I begin? Well, I just have a document that says day one, do this, and then do this, and then do this. So I have lots of resources I'd be happy to share. I have my colleagues' peer coaching thing. So happy to send more interested people down a rabbit hole. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll include that into the show notes then, and then the listeners can go onto that in their own time to have a look.
Perfect.
And Alexis, where can people find you if they wanted to reach out? Do you have a website? Do you have any social media profiles?
I do have a website, yes. My website is my organization. It's called Seel Center. It's CEEL Center, CENTER, the American spelling, .org. and I'm also on Twitter at Alexis Wiggins.
Okay. All right. So I'll put all that into the show notes as well. And hopefully some listeners will reach out and get in touch.
That's great. I would love that.
Great. Thank you. All right. Well, thank you so much, Alexis, for taking the time today. I know it's getting quite late there now. I really appreciate meeting you face to face finally. I know we've spoke over social media a couple of times. It's truly wonderful to have you on and to share your spiderweb discussion with the listeners and knowing that they have tools and further reading for them to be able to do to dig into it.
Yeah, the pleasure is all mine. Thank you so much. And I think it's actually a great time to rediscover this tool, because with ChatGPT and AI, I think writing is maybe not the future. I don't know. So perhaps discussion is.
Yeah, for sure. Especially with the rubrics that we can create. Yeah, we'll be able to be able to assess as well if needed.
Exactly.
All right. Okay, well, brilliant. Thank you very much again. I won't keep you too long. I know it's getting late, but thank you again. And for the listeners, everything will be in the show notes that you can go on and click on those links and delve into a bit more of the rabbit hole that is spiderweb discussion and all of the amazing work that Alexis has done.
Thanks, Matt.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, bye-bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Inquiry Teacher podcast. Do check the show notes for links and files that were mentioned in the episode. If you would like to get in touch, or if you would like to be on the podcast yourself, then please get in touch with myself. My contact information is also in the show notes, or you can head on over to inquiryteacher.com. Until next time, see you soon.